Good morning. You're watching D Program with Ted Rall and Jamal Thomas. It is Tuesday, July 7th, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. I don't know what's going on with Jamal. I just see his icon and he's a beautiful.
There we
icon.
Are.
There he is. Good morning, James.
What's going on, man?
Good. I mean, I like you. You know, your icon's great, but you're better talking and moving in general.
True. When I pop in, it defaults to not showing it.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that. Okay.
No, you're perfectly fine. It just defaults to it. It's fine. How are you doing, man? You doing okay this morning?
I'm doing great, and I'm really looking forward to today's show because I always do. But this is a lot of really interesting stories that are they're like textured, which is my favorite kind of story. So
yep.
I like to think that's our strength. So hopefully the audience agrees. Guys, we're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern time. And this is a regular work week, so we will be here all week. As usual, if you have questions, please like, follow, and share. Please put your questions in the live chat. Producer Robbie West will put them up. Paid chats are, of course, very, very appreciated and much needed, whether it's on Rumble or on YouTube. Those are the super chats on YouTube, the Rumble rants on Rumble, obviously. Okay, so we should just get to it. I don't even think we have time to summarize what we're going to be talking about. Just quickly, we'll talk about Graham Plattner, Marine Le Pen, and Hamas. I would vote that we go to Marine Le Pen right away because that just broke before we went on the air. What do you think?
Go for it.
Okay, so Marine Le Pen is the daughter of Jean-Marie Le Pen. She's the heir to the right-wing party in France, the far-right party, the Rassemblement National, not the furthest right. People should know that. And basically, she's managed to reform the party since her father's days. Long story short, she's favored to win the French presidency in all of the polls over the last couple of years. The election's being held next year. Emmanuel Macron is being term limited out. But she suffered some lawfare back in 2023. So what happened at that time was that some of her party's parliamentarians at the EU Parliament in Brussels, they were entitled to receive some European funds to pay their expenses and some of their salaries. But apparently some of them also did some work for the party while they were there, sort of like on the clock, and they weren't supposed to. Now, this is a technicality, okay?
Yes, it is.
It's definitely not like a serious event, but nevertheless, she was personally convicted of embezzlement. She said that she didn't know anything about it. I actually believe her. It doesn't sound like the kind of thing she would have been brought into the loop for. It's too minor. And she was unaware of it. Anyway, the point is she was personally held accountable because in France, the head of the party is held accountable. The powers that be definitely in the media do not want her to be president. So they basically went after her. She was the main part of the sentence that affected her for this story is that she was told she cannot run for public office for 5 years. That would take you through next year's election into 2028. This has huge political ramifications for arguably the oldest democracy in the world, right? Basically, the thing is the party that is favored to win, the candidate who's favored to win was going to be denied running on a more or less a technicality. That's certainly the way her followers viewed it. I think it's the way a lot of Frenchmen, I mean, you know, I'm on the far left and I viewed it that way too.
I view it that way. I'm not even there.
And so, you know, I mean, she took this to the next level, the Paris Appeals Court. They just ruled. It's afternoon in France. And their ruling was kind of a mixed bag. They said, okay, well, actually, we're suspending your 5-year ban. But for the next year, you are going to have to wear an ankle bracelet, an electronic monitor.
What?
That's right. So she had previously.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Marie Le Pen wasn't supposed to go to jail. Why does she need an ankle bracelet?
Well,
the case was like, we're not going to put you in jail, but you can't run. So now the appeals court came back and said, "Why? Where's the ankle bracelet coming in?"
It's a punishment by itself. So in France, when you wear the ankle bracelet, it's not like here where they're trying to know where you are so that if you decide to bail and they, you know, they like, oh, you know, Ted's at JFK Airport, let's get him. It's more of a punishment because they're depriving you of your privacy rights. Like, we know where you've been. We know who you talk to. We know who you meet with. We know who's donating to your campaign because we know where you go.
This was an appeals case. I didn't think this was another case entirely.
This is not a new case. This is the same case. This is the Paris Appeals Court. So,
Ted, this makes no sense. So I go to court.
Mm.
They say, okay, Jamal, we're not going to put you in jail, but you can't run for office for 5 years. Okay.
She was never going to be sent to jail. It was more like, Jamal, you're not going to be able to run for any public office in the U.S. for 5 years. It's like, well, okay, right. You can run, but you have to wear an ankle bracelet.
Yeah, but I thought they got rid of, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while since I saw this case, but I thought jail time was a potential.
They got rid of it, but they told her. She never had it, yeah. They didn't give it to her.
Right, they didn't give it to her, but they said, we're going to suspend that, so don't worry about that, but you're not going to be able to run.
Right.
And then you go back into an appellate court. How are they reinstituting potential charges? Because that's what it comes across as. They didn't make her wear an ankle monitor the first time around.
The conviction stands. They are not wiping away the conviction. They're just reducing the consequences of the conviction.
So they're saying, okay, so you can run, but you got to wear an ankle monitor now.
That's it. Now, I haven't, you know, this just broke. The decision, I don't even know if it's been posted yet. It's in French, in legalese. When it is, I'm going to have to read it. It's going to be
fair enough.
A struggle.
It just seems very weird to me that this wasn't part of the charges the first time around, meaning this wasn't part of the penalty the first time around. And now it seems like they're adding this at the appellate court, where the appellate court is a determination of whether or not they're going to appeal the first charge. It just feels weird. It feels like they're adding something to it.
They're not. This is actually a moderating of, I mean, she can now run. She believed as of yesterday, she might not be able to run at all. She can run. So I'm not trying to validate what they did. So now she's in this position. She has to decide within hours because she said that this evening, Paris time, which is in a matter of hours, she's going to announce whether she's going to run or not. She previously said she would not run if she had to wear an ankle bracelet because it would deny her the freedom of movement and the privacy that she needs in order to campaign freely. I'm not really sure I follow the logic of that. I think she should take a page from Donald Trump and weaponize and use this as she should wear skirts and show that bracelet. And work it and say, look, I'm your vindication. They came after me. Look at what they did to me. This is the power of the French state. She should work it, and she should be like, this is, you know, I'm a martyr to the system. The French are temperamentally, they hate elitism and they hate oppression. This kind of thing pisses them off, left, center, and right. I think it this would be kind of like when, remember when Paula Jones showed up in her cute miniskirt and her tight blouse to be frog walked by the police and when she was arrested? And she looked, and she was like, I'm going to look great and I'm going to make them look foolish, like arresting me. And it worked. That's what she should do. She should like, she should, this is definitely, I predict, I mean, look, this is, I'm on a limb here. I think she's going to run. I think she's not going to let this stop her. This will, if anything, just increase her popularity. To me, if I'm advising her, her backup was to, if she didn't run, she was going to, her protege is 30 years old, Jordan Bardella. And he's a force of nature. But I don't know if after Macron, who was also young, the French are really excited about running another, electing another young president, especially this young. I mean, 30 is young for a French president. Right. I don't think she wants to do that. I mean, she trusts and likes Bardello, but I just don't see it. So the Rassemblement National is probably going to run her, and she's probably going to win. And this all has massive repercussions.
National Front for the English speakers who don't speak French.
Yeah, not National Front anymore. That was her. She rebranded.
Oh, it's National Rally
National
now.
Rally. Yeah, National the Rally Rassemblement now. National. Yeah.
Yeah, National Rally. By the way,
that's a hot tip for people who don't know French politics. That is a reference to De Gaulle, right? Because his party was also a rassemblement, a rally, a national rally.
I agree with everything you just said. I agree with everything you said. I mean, look, European politics, I know people think that it's radically different. It's not radically different than the politics that happens in the U.S. The spectrum may be shifted, but it's not radical in the sense of that way we would understand it. When I was covering the European elections, they were saying very similar things that were being said in the United States, even though politically it was shifted in a particular way. I think you're right. I think Donald Trump has shown the gateway to how to weaponize and use this as a rhetorical device against your enemies, especially since your enemies was dumb enough to do it. Meaning they have stepped out of the shadows and have effectively said, we don't like this person for whatever particular reason. And the public who hates that establishment that came out and said, we don't like this particular person, is now going to be a target and a political weapon of that person, if that makes sense. I'm saying this weird. Basically, the fact that they have tried to stop her from running may be the motivation for her to run in the first place. Meaning if she said before, I'm not running, well, this is different. They actively tried to stop her using a bogus charge to do so. Mm-hmm. If anything, that may be more of an impetus to run than not. And it may be something that the French public gets behind her because of such. Meaning she was already winning in the polls. And people need to realize this. This is after decades of that party being seen as radioactive, where that party has now become the leading party in France. And by the way, the same thing or something similar is happening with the ADP in AFD, I'm sorry. And I always have to say the words, Alternative for Deutschland. It's because the acronym always throws me. The AFP in Germany, same thing, where you have a party that was reviled as a Nazi party, that because they pointed out, why are we doing this? Why are we taking a hit like this? Why aren't we using Russian oil? Why are we trying to go to war? And the people say, hey, they might be a Nazi party in the past, but they're making more sense now. I'm saying the same thing is true for Marie Le Pen. You're right. She should show that ankle monitor off. She should rhetorically bring up that they tried to stop her in the race, just like they stopped Carlin Gogescu in Romania. She should bring this up. This should be a weapon for her. And yeah, I agree with you. I think she could win, which is wild because under normal circumstances, the National Rally was always seen as this outlier party where the other political parties would do everything in their power to prevent from getting into political power. And I guess this is a question for you. You know better than me. Do you think that finally breaks in this upcoming election 2027?
Well, I mean, so it's going to be, so the French system is that you have, it's two rounds. So all the candidates run in the first round and then the top two vote getters face off in the second round. Right. I think she's going to come out on top in both. I mean, unless either someone, there's another Macron type black swan moment where it's like someone who steps out of nowhere sweeps French politics. That does happen. France is very amenable to that. Or let's say the left is able to unite behind Jean-Luc Mélenchon or someone else like that. I mean, Mélenchon, he's good, but he's missing that certain it factor that people in a representative democracy are looking for in their president. He just is. I love him, but I see that problem. And I mean, I voted for him in the last time, so I do love him. It's like if the left can unite, maybe if the left could unite, like when does that happen? It would be a seismic shockwave. This was her father's party, which she has burnished the reputation. She's rebranded it. But I mean, he literally went to prison. He literally was convicted of denying that the Holocaust happened or that there were gas chambers at Auschwitz. He literally talked about how great Philippe Pétain was, the collaborationist leader of Nazi-occupied France in the 40s. Right. That's her dad. She broke with her dad, rebranded the party. She insists that now it's basically French for the French only. By American standards, the National Front isn't really, it's not as far right as Trumpism or MAGA. Let me give you some examples. National health care ain't going anywhere. The early retirement at age 62 under a National Front government going nowhere. Social safety net going nowhere. Retirement going nowhere. All French workers cannot be dismissed for cause. You have to be, your boss can't, I mean, sorry, only for cause, right? Like if your boss wants to fire you just because like he feels like it, like here, they can't do that in France. You have a contract. All that stuff is going to stay under a right-wing National Front party. This is climate change. They believe in it. So like it's not as far right as ours is, but it'll be like definitely nativist, controlled borders, reduced immigration. Hard to see how that works within the EU, right? Because they have open borders with all of their neighboring countries. So, how do you do that? I mean, France, along with Germany, is one of the two founding countries that created the EU together. So it's like they're not just one other country. They're not like another member like Croatia. So it's just that's complicated. But I think the French are really pissed off. The establishment going after her just makes, this gets her 10 points in the polls. It just does. People who would never have considered voting for her will vote for her as a spite vote.
Yeah, this was basically, it's going to backfire.
It's like Mamdani. The reason I voted for Mamdani. It's like, I thought he was too young. I thought he was inexperienced. I thought he was wet behind the ears. Then when I saw how badly the establishment despised him and were afraid of him, I was like, oh, that guy's got my vote.
Yeah, it's a Trump factor.
Yeah.
It's like they did everything in their power to go after Trump. And some people thought it was, I thought it was outrageous. I despise Trump and I thought it was outrageous.
Yeah.
Like, meaning if you lose me in this.
And we talked about it at the time. I agreed with you. And look, I think there's a chance that Kamala Harris, or if Biden had been able to run, they would have been able to win in 2024 if they had just fucking let Trump be Trump and like not fucked with him for 4 years.
Yeah, but in their mind, this is a pressing threat. It's a pressing threat to them.
They can't.
Let's talk about that for just a second.
Yeah.
This paternalistic thing that you're sitting at the top of a political space and you look out and you say, hey, that guy's a threat. Now, you may even say he's a threat to America as a whole, not just a threat in and of itself, that we can't let somebody this incompetent hold the reins of power. And then you think to yourself, okay, so what do we do in order to stop her from doing that? And even if we have to go outside the norms in order to get rid of him, we should do that because that is in the ultimate best interest. And it backfires. I think the issue with that mindset, and I get it. I may even get stuck in that mindset if I was in that position. The problem with that is the country chooses, and the country chooses for a reason, because the person in charge may not be the best person. And the person who is in charge will, in some cases, obviously, look at themselves as being the best thing for America. This other thing is bad, but that's a self-interested point of view. Hence, elections. I don't know. I mean, I can kind of see where they're coming from. By the same token, that perspective is nonsense. Well, give me your take on that. Or do you think it's nonsense?
You're right. I mean, what you're talking about that these elites suffer from, and particularly in the media, is it's paternalism, right? It's the idea that, like, we know better. We can see the country headed toward disaster. We know better than them. We can't leave this to the whim of the electorate. We can't let democracy prevail because, you know, what if the voters make the wrong call?
Right.
Well, the voters often make the wrong call. That's part of democracy, right? I mean, so, and like, if you don't like democracy, then don't. Than just, you know, have a coup and go to authoritarianism or monarchy or whatever. But this is kind of like, it's like parenting, right? At a certain point, your kid, you have to let your kid drive the car when you're not around. And they could drive too fast and they could show off with their friends and they could drink or smoke weed while they're driving. They can do all those things. And you have to be okay with letting them make some bad decisions and maybe crashing your car, because otherwise they will never fucking grow up, right? And they'll never be adults. And like, these people are treating us, like the DNC and everything, like we're children, Rosenthal, the CEO of the New York Times. These guys are deciding for us. And like, the thing is, I guarantee you the American public will make many more bad decisions. We voted for Nixon over McGovern. We voted for Bush over Kerry. We made a lot of bad decisions. James Buchanan was elected by the people who were allowed to vote. You've got to be okay with that. Otherwise, you're fundamentally anti-American, un-American, and anti-democratic, small d democratic. I mean, you're right. And like, it backfires. You make things worse when you put your thumb on the scale. Look at what happened yesterday. We were talking about the World Cup. Look, you know, Belgium burned up the United States yesterday. When I woke up this morning, I was happy to hear it. Yeah, they destroyed them. They said that Belgium played like they were on fire. Pissed off, right? And Americans played like derps. Cheating didn't help, right? The energy, they were, I think, subconscious. Soccer players all say it's very psychological, right? The mood that they're in. And like, they knew they were kind of like benefiting from something that wasn't right. The Belgians knew that they had been aggrieved, and they won. I mean, there's a chance. The U.S. might have done better if Trump hadn't called the FIFA guy. It's just right. Like that. Just fucking stay out of it. Let it be.
What if your kid crashes the car and gets killed in the car crash?
That can happen. And you know, that's the thing. It's like, yeah. And what if, let's say, your German democracy decides to elect an Austrian corporal? That can happen. And it's a legitimate concern, and there are people watching whose kid probably died in a car accident, right? I mean, that can't happen. And like that, I mean, to say that that sucks doesn't even begin to touch it's a complete catastrophe.
Yeah.
But then,
see, I guess, and that's where...
That's the system. That's the world we live in. You
gotta be honest with you. I think I would be susceptible to that.
I'm a control freak. Before I went on the air today, I noticed that the curtain behind me was off kilter and I went and changed it. I'm a control freak. But like, you have to, part of being an adult is like recognizing these impulses in yourself and saying like, okay, I know that I want to do this, but I will not do this because it's wrong.
Oh, see, that's the rub. And you know, it's wild, just to put this in context, both political parties attempted a coup.
Yes.
The Democratic Party tried a soft coup with Trump in either trying to take him out of the political space by putting him in a cage.
Yep.
Something that we do to other dictators or other world leaders that we don't particularly like. I mean, look at where Maduro is now. He's sitting in a cage, not yep. because he did anything wrong, but because we just didn't necessarily like him. Okay, we tried to do the same
thing. Noriega, Saddam.
And for the last part, Trump tried to do it just directly, right? I am God Emperor from here on out. Like, we are going and careening into bad places in our 250th year. This is not going well.
No, it's not going well. And, you know, I mean, look, as paternalistic as American political and journalistic elites are, man, they don't touch the French. I mean, because there are still people there who think that they're aristocrats and have titles. They somehow didn't get the whole guillotine memo. and I mean, it's like the class system is really rigid there. I mean, it's also an incredible meritocracy. Like, you can come from Jordan Bardella, who is the, Le Pen's heir apparent, 30 years old. He grew up in the banlieue, which is, you know, it translates to suburbs, but it's not like our suburbs. Okay. The French suburbs, it's the projects. It's brutal. It's dangerous. It's rough. He's a product of that. And he went to he studied hard, went to the best colleges in the country. And it is a meritocracy, because if you get into the Sorbonne, you know, you go for free. You just have to pay your books. It's like, and in France, they can do that. But so it's weird, because it's like paternalistic, but it's also a very egalitarian society in other ways. It's complicated. Yeah. But look, I think, you know, we have to start looking. I mean, if Le Pen chooses not to run, that'll be political suicide for the Rassemblement National. It would be foolish of her. I don't think, one thing I've never seen from her is foolishness.
She'll run. I think she'll run. I don't think people give up political power.
She's heavily favored to win.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think people give up political power like that. And she has been at the head of this party for more than a decade.
Yeah, and she looks a lot older than she is. She's 57. I mean, she has a lot of energy. You know, she's still. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's been head of this party for God knows how long. She was able to bring it from.
She stole it from her dad.
Yeah, and the party was revived to where it is now. I just don't believe that after all of that work, while she's at the precipice, that she says, "Yeah, I'm out."
The point is, this doesn't hurt her, right, at all. It doesn't reduce her chances. I mean, I think honestly, she's cold blooded, and she literally cares more about her party than she cares about herself. I think that, like, if she thought there was a 1% higher chance of Bardella winning than her, she would tell Bardella to run. Yeah,
But I don't think he has a better chance than her. I think her chances are better than his.
100%, no question.
Yeah.
All right.
All of this work, you don't give this up.
Definitely not. If you're just joining us, we're going to talk about Graham Plattner. We're going to talk about Hamas. Thanks for joining us. Please like, follow, and share. No ads, so we can just press onward. Should we talk about Graham Plattner? Get that out of the way.
Sure.
All right. So I assume you heard what happened. So Graham Plattner has had like a whole series of. He's the Oysterman who is the led a from the left insurgent challenge to the Democratic establishment, right. And managed to score a surprise win in the Democrat for he's now the Democratic Senate nominee, challenging Susan Collins to become the new U.S. senator from Maine. Wow. I don't know if he would have won or not. I think it's pretty clear he's going to drop out of the race today. So a bunch of revelations came out about him being abusive to women, including physically abusive. And now yet another, I guess this is an ex-girlfriend, is saying that he raped her violently about 5 or 6 years ago. So that one of the things that happened when he was approached by his donors during the primary process, they said, like, there's not going to be any new shit, is there? And he was like, no. It's like, well, yes. And so, you know, here we are. And I mean, you can imagine how pissed they are. I mean, it all, it's just a reminder that you have to vet your candidates really well. But yeah, so Graham Plattner, he's, you know, basically, I kind of like, I'm kind of mad at him because it's kind of like.
Why are you mad at him? Oh, because he didn't tell anybody that he was a violent rapist.
Everybody knows, you know, like it, like if you ran for, if I'm not going to say what they would be, but I know if I ran for the Senate that I know what things would come up from my past and right. would be used against me. And I, right. and some of those things I could probably brush off very easily, could not even talk about them. Some of them I'd have to confront the way that Obama did early on. He knew that, you know, he had used cocaine. And so he put it in his book that came out years before he ran. So by the time someone brought up in 2007, hey, he used cocaine. Everyone's like, yeah, we read it in his book, douchebag. You can, you know, so
inoculate
you,
yourself.
And then there's stuff like, you know, I haven't raped anyone, but if there's stuff that you're like, I might not be so easy to get rid of, right? Like if you knew there was someone who might drop a dime on you like that, then maybe you should spare your party and yourself and your loved ones the pain of this public scrutiny. I mean, they're going to find out. I mean, I know nobody really knows what Lindsey Graham does in bed, but like, you know what I mean? Like it's people are going to know. I mean, you have to assume. So like, why did he run?
Well, I don't think the pool boy is going to tell on Lindsey Graham. I was going to ask you, why do you think? I mean, because you're right, right? Like, this isn't like Carlos Danger, where it's embarrassing, but it's not rape, even though it's embarrassing and it's politically damaging. But he was able to, what is it, Wiener? Wiener was able to have a political career. He got into Congress. He just couldn't stop for whatever particular reason. He just kept doing this stuff even when he was in Congress.
Yeah, I guess my thing is, I mean, people forget this. He got caught. It was a big news story. The New Yorkers were like, well, who hasn't sexted, you know, bits of their junk to, you know, someone. And so New Yorkers are like, it's a very liberal state. Right now there's a documentary about Robin Bird, who was Community Access Cable. She was sued, right? Robin Bird was porn. It was porn on Community Access Cable. And someone sued for obscenity. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And this is, I promise, Jermaine. The U.S. Supreme Court said, well, this is all based on community standards. If you were in Birmingham, this is, goes against community standards to have porn on. This is New York City. And they said, New York City does not have community standards. Okay.
The porn on community access was okay. Community
standards. And I kind of thought, we should have that on t-shirts. Like that's like a great thing. Like no, no standards. Nude people walk down the street in the middle of the night. I'm like, yeah, that's true. There's no community standards. Okay. That's so, but like this guy, so Wiener got caught. And then like you said, he couldn't stop. He got caught. I mean, some right winger was basically like, who was 17 or pretending to be 17 or something, basically got him to do it again. It's like, dude, you got burned already. Like, you know, you're using a landline, right? No more cell phone for you. I mean,
in fairness, he's married to Huda, so the man can get a pass.
If I remember correctly, she's very attractive. That was Clinton's press secretary or something, or secretary, or
her close political aide.
Your idea of beautiful in mind.
Super rich dude, right?
Yeah, your idea of beautiful mind are very different.
Okay, maybe I'm misremembering her.
Oh no,
maybe I'm misremembering her.
She's not ugly. But I mean, if you're best friends with Hillary Clinton, probably you're not the most pleasant person to be married to.
She's married to Alexander Soros now.
Oh right, they got divorced after the dick pics and all that stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, he kept sending dick pics to.
I mean, people. No, I mean, Huma Abedin is hot. No question.
That's what I thought. She's very attractive.
Yeah. Very elegant. I mean, it's true. The fact that she was like hanging out with the Hillster is not politically appealing to me. But
no, it's not. I guess my thing is for the guy though. I don't know what will be in his mind. Maybe you don't think that this stuff is going to come out. Maybe you think arrogant. The people aren't going to expose it. I don't know. I mean, rape is pretty heavy.
U.S. fucking Senate, right? I mean, like, it's one thing to be like you're running for alderman, but I mean, this is the U.S. Senate, and like in a highly polarized environment. You know the GOP is going to fucking dig up everything they can on you. That's kind of their job. Yes. The media is going to go after you and look into your past. You know, I don't know. It's just sort of like, I mean, he's an idiot. And now we're past the primaries and the Democratic Party has to figure out what to do. I mean, I'm assuming he's gone, right? But he's right. Gone. And they're like, now it's kind of funny. It's like a repeat of 2024. Where they're like, you know, with Biden's withdrawal at the same time of the year, oh, maybe we can stand up like a sort of abridged new primary process and have a do-over. It's like, come on, here you.
They should have a mini primary. Yeah. Don't choose the candidate. Do not choose the candidate. Have a mini primary. Like, meaning, I get that this is a disaster.
It's a disaster.
But you compound the disaster by just picking some rando as opposed to actually having another. I know it's not great.
Is there time, though? I mean, you know how it is. They have to print ballots. They have to. There's filing deadlines. I mean, it's.
I mean, they have until what, November?
Challenges here.
Well, the election is in November. When is the deadline for the thing? I mean, because otherwise,
have to look into Maine's politics, right? I mean, but like, I would imagine that this is a matter of you have maybe a few weeks to, and they have to set up, you know, a ballot in every little like village and town in rural Maine, which is a very rural state. I mean,
what's the alternative?
Appoint someone, just know you're going to lose.
Oh, do you want to do that? I mean, I guess I'm looking at the race with Kamala Harris and the way they just chose. Well,
that's different. Harris. That's the presidency.
You think it's different? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of, I mean, obviously the party is a corporation. They could choose whoever they want. And the reason that they have the primary process is because they want buy-in from the public. They don't need buy-in from the public, but they want their candidate to win. Mm-hmm. I guess my thought is, I don't know. I guess choosing just assumes that you're going to lose the seat.
Well, I think you can assume that. I mean, don't
elect a rapist. I mean, they literally elected a rapist.
They elected, yes, a probable racist. I mean, this is like the Bill Cosby thing. You know, one person, it can be a false allegation. Maybe two. Yeah. There's too much smoke here. There's too many accusations. I mean, it's just basically like, just look at him. The guy drinks too much, or has drunk too much, or both. You know, he's a mean cuss and he fucking hurts women. I mean, the end, right? I mean,
we'll see if he drops out. So, I mean, these are kind of explosive allegations to be like, I'm just going to rat this shit out.
I mean, if you imagine wanting to break stage, Donald Trump did.
True, but those were different. I mean, like, can you imagine being on a debate stage and Susan Collins is calling the guy rapist the entire time? Oh, that would be disastrous. I mean, Trump wrote it out because, to be honest, the allegations against Trump seem ridiculous. Like, meaning, like the idea that when we were in a room or we were in a store, there was nobody there. This happened 30-something years ago, and he sexually assaulted me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's not shred of evidence.
I wanted to make out. I didn't want to fuck. Right. Like, it's so, like, the timing to me, the fact that it was, like, what, this is from the 90s?
Yeah. And you're bringing this up now during the presidential election and we haven't a shred of evidence that attests of being raped or assaulted and mm-hmm. we're just supposed to take your word for it? Like, I don't know where to go with that. I don't know. I mean, again, I despise Trump and I didn't know where to go with that.
Yeah, now.
Especially when you're giving a guy, like millions of dollars. Just because he said you're lying.
I know two people who know Jean Carroll, and just full transparency, they say she's extremely credible. But, you know, for whatever that's worth.
I mean, but it's not about her being credible. It's just I don't have any evidence for it.
Right. No, I know. I think you can't fuck someone over based for something where there's no evidence. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
It's just that.
Here you have strong, well, you have evidence. I mean, a number of accusers have stepped forward. So, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, here's the thing. At bare minimum, his ex-girlfriends don't think he should be a U.S. senator, right? That's why they're stepping forward, even if they're lying, right? It's like they don't, like, I got to say, I don't think my ex-girlfriends would say I should not be a U.S. senator. You know, I think my ex-girlfriends would think that I would make a good senator. You know what I mean? Not that I'm running.
I mean, I don't think they would come forward and trash me, regardless of whatever they think of my political ambitions. Meaning, I don't think they would come forward and make shit up just to stop me from getting into political office.
Right.
If they hated my guts, I don't think they would do that.
Right, exactly. No, and so, like, yeah, so all of that, it's bad, you know.
I hope he fights it. And here's why.
I'm all ears. Let's hear it.
You know, I'm being dead serious, and here's why. It's because if the establishment is trying this hard to take somebody out, and if they offer enough incentive for false accusations, if that's all it takes, keep in mind this guy's never been convicted. He's never been charged. Sure. This is all in the court of public opinion.
And he's a true insurgent. He's never held political office.
Anyone could say anything about anyone. And if you think that the establishment will not give some kind of incentive to bring forth a wave of false accusations against anyone that they perceive as a threat, you're giving way too much credit. These people, they're going after him because they are afraid of him. And if they are afraid of him, then by definition, I would support him. Because I want to burn the system down.
Wait, what if he's guilty?
I have no idea. Well, then they should have went to the cops and charged him. They should have. There is a legal process. You know, if I raped somebody, then I should be taken to court and convicted of that crime. That never happened here. This is public character assassination, is what this is. There is a recourse.
Well, it's not that's character.
By definition, it is. They are attacking the man's character. I mean, Ted, you just convicted this man on the internet based on allegations of rape. He's never been charged. Not one of these women filed a police report, to my knowledge. There's never been any kind of legal process.
You know who hasn't denied that he did this is Graham Plattner.
Why would you?
Graham Plattner did not. If someone accused
me, would deny that you committed a violent rape?
I would sue them for libel, and I would absolutely deny it.
Here's what I would do. And listen, I don't have enough money to run, but if I did, I guarantee I would. And it would not surprise me if the Republican establishment went after me in any way, shape, or form that they could. I would take the Thomas Jefferson route when he was accused of being with Sally.
Sally Hemming.
I wouldn't say a word because the press, they wanted him to defend what he did. They were trying to drag him through that whole circus, which you're never going to win. The best thing you could do in that case is not give any fuel to the fire. Just say what I said. These people are afraid of me. They're dragging this stuff up. I'm not going to address it. Let's run the issues.
Well, his problem is his donors are going to drying up.
Maybe not.
Speak, you know?
Well,
the reason I said this is not going to work is because if somebody, the first thing that people expect you to do is to say, I didn't do this.
Yeah.
Just as a normal human being, this is nonsense. And yeah, I agree with Ted. You sued the shit out of him for doing something like that. I mean, they're effectively, as you point out, they're assassinating your character. They're calling you a rapist.
But can you?
When I sued the LA Times, you know, for libel, they, you know, I talked to lawyers, I talked to journalists. Everyone told me the same thing. It's kind of like, well, it's going to suck ass, right? It's like, and I know because I've been down this path before. But also, what you're broadcasting is you're willing to take big fucking chances to prove that you're telling the truth. Like you expose yourself to discovery. They can fucking take your computer and like look at every email. They'll know. You know, they'll be able, if you lied, they're going to fucking know because you fucking exposed yourself by suing them. So like, you know, if it's not true, he ought to sue.
But here's the point though. Can you wage a legal campaign like that at the same time you're running a political campaign? You only have so much bandwidth in a day.
Are you kidding?
That's the point.
This lawsuit wouldn't see the light of day for years. It's America. You know, you're not going to be in court next week. It's not Sharia law where they're efficient. Sharia law is efficient. It's like you're just not. Nothing would happen. You hire lawyers; they take care of it. You know.
I mean, Trump does it all the time, right? Yeah, I'm pressing charges against so and so, and then you let your lawyers basically do the years. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, it's the principle behind it.
So who has more resources, Trump or the schmuck in Maine?
Hey, those oysters.
Who has the bigger
dollar oysters are raking in the money.
Listen, I'm just saying. I hope the Plattner fight. I hope he just keeps on going, takes his lumps, win, lose, or fail. And if he does lose the election, I hope he sues them. Like these women who are accusing him, I hope he takes them all to court and just puts them on a cross. Dead serious.
He didn't do it.
He looks guilty.
Well, so do I. I mean, look at my haircut, Ted. I mean,
people know I look. People can look guilty. I mean, I think about Gary Condit, right? He didn't kill that girl, but everyone thought he did. I did. I thought he did. He looked guilty.
Listen, the point I'm trying to say is that the establishment is afraid of you. There's a reason why they're going after you.
Yeah, if the establishment is going after you, like if I ran, I'm a communist, right? I know they would go after me. They want to nail me to the wall. So it would behoove me not to give them any fucking excuses, right?
I agree, but Ted,
Bernie Sanders. Bernie's clean, man. He's clean.
Ted, you don't have to give them an excuse. They'll just make one up. That's the point that I'm making here. Do you think that I'm going to lie? Of course they will. That's the whole point. Now, if we have a show today, I'll go away. But
we've done no comments, so let's do some of these. All right, Spooky Fog, thanks for the $2. Have you heard of Peter Thiel's project Objection? Which sounds like a cologne. Objection for men.
He is a psycho. He is. I mean, like his association with humanity is very tenuous. He's very strange. He's very strange.
Very, very well said.
He's terrifying.
Objection is a tech startup started by Aaron D'Souza, sponsored by Peter Thiel. It's a pay-to-play AI tribunal where users pay $2 to $15,000 to trigger investigations into unfavorable media coverage or published claims. What the fuck?
That's what I mean. Like these people,
what a
man.
Nut.
Like, but he's not a nut. He's using power for his advantage. That is literally using power for his advantage. I'm rich. I'm a billionaire. I have the capability of cutting down stories that are against my interests. And so I'm going to pay money to do that. If you're thinking of the Washington Post, for example, why did Bezos buy the Washington Post? He didn't do it just because he loved the news. He did it because he wanted to control it. Same thing with Bloomberg. Same thing with Elon Musk and Twitter. These are billionaires who are paying money in order to, let's say, ensure that the coverage of those same billionaires is favorable.
Mm.
They use power for their advantage.
Do we see, and this is a good transition because we do need to talk about this. Thanks very much for the $10 donation from Zola Rosa. Did you see Venezuela is normalizing relations with Israel? Like, why?
Because Venezuela has been taken over by the U.S.
Correct.
De La Rosa, I mean, let's be honest. Maduro didn't walk out there on his own. And it's not like they fired a shot in anger at the U.S. when the U.S. effectively came to get Maduro. He was obviously betrayed. He's obviously betrayed.
Yes, that's totally true. Maybe Bluth Funk. Plattner made an appearance on Tim Heidecker's Office Hours Live. And there he said someone reached out to him to run. It's not impossible that the Dems knew this guy had skeletons and they set him up to fail.
Oh man, that's an expensive setup.
Yeah, it's not impossible, but it's not likely either. Yeah. P.W. Walker.
That would be them losing a seat just for the sake of losing a seat.
It's the Senate. Rape accusations didn't derail Biden. The media that ignored those accusations back then are suddenly paying attention to Plattner. Yeah, because Biden's part of the club. Plattner's not. Plattner's an oysterman.
It's that.
Membership has its privileges, you know?
Yeah, it's that.
Privileges has
its privileges. Had accused Joe Biden of rape, had, I mean, all sorts of stuff. And what did they do? They shooed her away while going after Andrew Cuomo at the same time.
Manchild, thanks for the dollar. In a statement to NPR, Plattner adamantly denied the allegations, calling them troubling, serious, and false. Innocent until proven guilty, y'all. Agreed. I don't like that. I do not like that denial.
What do you mean? Why do you?
Serious, troubling, and false. It'd be
well, you did say they were false.
Outrageous, an outrage. Okay, false, outrageous, and defamatory would be better.
Fair enough. But you know, I'm not going to put it over.
If you're falsely accused, you should be angry.
He should be angry. And he did say they were false. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Look, from my point of view, he had to deny it right off the bat. If you can fight through the headwind, that's the question. And I and Robbie is maybe a believer. I agree. He should keep fighting. He should keep going.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, it looks like Mitch McConnell is he's being reported to be brain dead.
That report that came out years ago.
Yeah,
that's wrong. I'm sorry. That's wrong. That's wrong.
But accurate.
That's wrong.
I mean, there's nothing about you is lost at all.
Listen, no lies detected. Yeah.
But the turtle community is very upset.
We like our monsters.
Yeah, we do.
It's that, right? I mean, Mitch McConnell is a horrible human being.
Yeah, he's a
and yet, monster. Him, he's been around for so long, you just kind of get used to the fact that the horrible human being is there. I don't know.
Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah.
For real. I mean, he's had a much longer life than he deserved.
Yes.
We should talk about Hamas. So Hamas has, I think, pulled an amazing move. Look, I'm going to go out. I'm going to say this again. October 7th was a brilliant piece of strategy. It put the Palestinian conflict at center stage where it had been backburnered for years. And now they've pulled another brilliant move. Under the ceasefire agreement from last year, which everyone forgot about because Israel violates it every single day, Hamas has announced that they're going to turn over, in accordance with the ceasefire agreement that they signed, their power to this new technocratic sort of board of peace type thing. And basically they're going to remain, the military wing of Hamas will remain the military wing, and they have pledged to disarm at some point in the future. But in the meantime, we're turning over the administration. Here's the car keys. You drive Gaza. It's actually puts a lot of pressure on the Israelis. The Israelis are very upset because they're like, well, this is a trick. It's a stunt. I don't know. Adhering to the terms of the agreement that you signed could be viewed as a stunt. It could also be viewed as looking good to Trump. Like, look, Hamas is doing what they said they were going to do. You're also, how can you administer a territory that is 57% now under IDF direct occupation, and that the Israelis have completely leveled and destroyed? Oh, you want to administer it? Like, you know, the 1.8 million people who you haven't killed yet, you feed them. Okay, fuck you. And so basically the Israelis are saying, well, this is an excuse not to have to disarm. It's like, it's two separate issues. But I think it's, it's a smart move.
I don't even know. I agree with you. I don't know how Hamas would be expected to administer a spot that is being occupied by the Israeli military. I mean, they have people effectively living in tents in a small section of what's left of Gaza, living in tents full of rats, full of water.
Yeah.
I mean, it's utterly depraved what Israel has these people living in, like the situation that they're living in. Yeah. I don't know how you would administer that. Anyway, the majority of the place has been leveled. They've taken down 80-90% of the buildings in Gaza.
That's right.
And so I don't know how that works in practice in general. So from Hamas's standpoint, they probably thought, what's the point? Either way, right? We have no, it's impossible to administer this as if it was some traditional governmental structure.
They used to. Yeah, they ran the schools, they had traffic cops, they picked up the garbage. Yeah, they were in charge.
No, I'm saying now, however, the place has been leveled.
Right.
And Israel is occupying 60% of it, give or take, with the idea of occupying 70% of it at some point. So, I look, I get it, right? From Hamas' standpoint, what's the point? I don't believe they're going to disarm anytime soon. But
I wouldn't.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Right? Like, how... What would be, it's not like this is kind of like the Hezbollah thing. Disarming doesn't stop Israel from attacking you. It just makes them more predacious in those attacks because you no longer have the ability to defend yourself.
Right.
The only thing that is defending southern Lebanon is Hezbollah. Giving up the guns is not going to do anything to stop Israel's advance when they are explicit in taking Lebanon, or at the very least aspects of Lebanon, piece by piece. I guess my feeling is the same thing for Gaza. Giving up your guns is not going to stop Israel from killing you. It just makes the killing more easy without consequence. And so administer the area. Israel does not care if all of these people starve to death. Let's be very clear. Starvation was used as a weapon.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it means. And the Board of Peace, I don't even know where they're getting their money from. They're obviously not getting troops from other countries to go into Gaza. That's not going to happen. This idea of having Muslim killing Muslims is what the U.S. and what Israel wanted. That doesn't seem going to happen.
It was never going to happen. It was always stupid. A fever dream.
But it's what they wanted. Just like they want the civil war in Lebanon now. Basically making policy, saying we need you and making a deal that the government is going to take the weapons of Hezbollah. Good luck with that. Good luck. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. Tom Barak wanted that to happen for years. Never going to happen.
Agreed. Yeah. So it's going to be, I mean, it's super interesting. I mean, I'm writing my column today. It goes out later today about sort of my, you know, what we were talking about yesterday about my idea that actually Iran, you know, which used to be a ally under to the U.S., is a far potentially more valuable ally to the United States than Israel. And if the U.S. could make nice to Iran to the extent that Iran could start to maybe trust them a little bit, mm-mm, it would be the right move from our point of view. I don't know. It's, you know, if I'm the Iranian, I don't trust as far as I can throw us. But, you know, it's like, if we could make it work, it would be fantastic for us. And I think the Israelis are, like, the thing is, we don't trust the Israelis anymore. That trust is broken, right? They tried to assess, you know, by the way, I don't know if I picked this up yesterday and it was like, holy shit. So Trump started the war in February. Apparently, within a couple of weeks,
he was already reaching out to Iran
to try to to bring it to an end. They already knew right away they had fucked up.
He was pushing through Pakistan to get Pakistan to basically, this was reported months ago, where he was basically reaching out to Pakistan to try to get Pakistan to get Iran to be like, hey, chill out. And to make it even worse, to act as if Pakistan was working on their own. Meaning Trump had given Pakistan a document, Pakistan or somebody leaked the document with all the Trumpian phrases and everything else to make it clear that it was coming from the U.S. And so then the question became, okay, well, is Pakistan being an honest arbiter considering that they're being pushed by the U.S. in order to push these peace negotiations? I got to be honest with you, though. I don't buy the premise. I'm not certain if I buy... I'm sorry. There have been too many reports that the U.S. and Israel is at odds only to be nonsense, which makes me very skeptical of... new reports that come up.
You're right. But I mean, and like, look, inertia is an incredibly powerful force. And usually things will just continue the way they have been. But there's a lot of reasons for them not to be. Unfortunately, that this will have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's 10 o'clock Eastern time, which means it's time for TMI. We'll be switching over. We'll be raiding over on Rumble over to there. If you're on YouTube, please go over. Just Google it. Just go over to TMI and my name and you'll find us. We'll be back tomorrow. And we also have the Q&A show tomorrow at 12 noon. So please tune into that. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later.